believe they got something going around with, like, how he eat and stuff like that. So I believe that's playing a part in how the guy works, man. He, in practice, I believe I said it before, like, he don't like to mess up. It can be like, it was my fault. I'm going to say it was my fault. He can be like, no, man, I got to do this better. It's like, all right, bro. Like, you know, but that's great to see from a guy like him and all if he's established in the league. You know, that's a guy who want to be great, and he's proven that.
Lamar Jackson on Derrick Henry. Those two running 1 and 2 in Baltimore, and the Bills will play in Baltimore for Sunday Night Football, looking to go in to go 4-0 for the first time since 2020. Joining us on the Western Hotline is Luke Jones from WNST, covers the Ravens. Luke, good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Thanks for taking some time ahead of what looks to be a pretty fun and big matchup.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, I was just talking with one of our own hosts, and you know, it feels like these two teams are kindred spirits, right? I mean, so much regular season success, but both teams haven't been able to break through against Mahomes in January, but can't get much better than this for Week 4, that's for sure.
Yeah, kindred spirits, the same kind of trajectories, and yet not that many meetings, right? Like, we've got the playoff game here in 2020. There's a comeback win for the Bills there in Baltimore, but there have not been that many games. One thing I noticed about Baltimore, Luke, and maybe you could speak to this, the Ravens play more close games than any team ever, because whether they're blowing leads, which they've done a couple times, or winning close games and holding on, like, it's seems like Baltimore games are always, you know, stressful.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, I agree with you, and everyone sees that graphic that comes up every time they're in a position like they were against Dallas or against Vegas the week before when they blew a two-score lead in the fourth quarter. But this team has also had some absolute wallopings of some good teams. I mean, last year they crushed Detroit. They crushed Seattle. They beat the 49ers really handily in December. I mean, you look at their point differential and you'd say, oh, well, they blow a lot of teams out. But to your point, when they get in position where it gets dicey, boy, it gets really dicey. I mean, it's almost like when things go awry in the fourth quarter on those occasions, it really goes wrong. So it's a strange team because they're 1-2. You look at them from a, you know, look at all the different advanced metrics and DVOA and things like that still tell you they've been one of the best teams in the league, but they've got to finish. And until they do that, especially when a team like the Bills are coming to town, no lead really feels safe. And again, it's something that they've been so good to have these leads over the last few years in the fourth quarter. So you can kind of look at it as half full, but at the same time, boy, when they lose, it's just in such excruciating, maddening fashion.
Yeah, I'm wondering what explains that, because they look on paper to be better equipped to finish games just by having Derrick Henry, I think, right? Like, he's playing well. He's averaging 5 yards a carry. So, like, whether it was last week or the Raider game, do you think those are going to be more anomalies than in the past because they have Henry and you would think they'd be able to kind of bleed games out better?
I mean, you'd like to, but at the same time, and this is one reason I'll be fully transparent here. I wasn't over the moon about the Derrick Henry signing, not from the standpoint of that he's 30 or he can't play anymore or he didn't have a great year in Tennessee last year, but it's like, look at the Ravens' rushing offenses over the last 5 years. They've had all kinds of backs that they've plugged in, and Lamar Jackson being the force multiplier that he is, they've never really had trouble running the football. And even last year, I mean, go back and look at their numbers. I mean, in the third and fourth quarter, they ran the heck out of the football, of usually with leads. So they didn't have as much of an issue closing out leads last year. So what you say is true, and I don't disagree with what you just said, but I don't think that's necessarily been a big problem. Their problem has been a defense that, back in week two, I think they held the Las Vegas Raiders to, it was like 44 yards in the first half, and then suddenly Gardner Minshew looks like Patrick Mahomes in the fourth quarter, and they held the Cowboys to 6 points through three quarters down in Dallas on Sunday, and then suddenly they're marching down the field on them. So, I mean, yeah, their pass defense, for whatever reason, it's been really good in the first half of games, and it's just really struggled, even with a game script that suggests, well, they can't run the ball, and they're trailing by multiple scores, you know they're going to throw it, and they haven't been able to stop it. So I think, yes, inherently what you said, I don't disagree, but you know, for whatever reason, it's just, you know, for me, it's been much more of a defense that just hasn't been able to play 60 minutes for whatever reason. And you know, maybe it's defensive coordinator, maybe it's some of the personnel that they lost in the offseason, but it's something that they better fix very quickly because the Bills aren't going to feel sorry for them in that department, that's for sure.
Luke Jones, WNST in Baltimore. The defense there, as you mentioned, like one of the things I saw was they've given up a lot of big plays. It's been explosive chunk plays, which has been a theme in the league this year, that those plays are down, but teams are having their success against Baltimore in that department.
Yeah, it has been. And I'll tell you where it's really shown up. It's really been that middle intermediate portion of the field. And, you know, kind of that area just beyond Roquan Smith when they're, and obviously they play a decent amount of man coverage, but when they're in zone, it's that area beyond Roquan Smith and in front of free safety Marcus Williams. I mean, teams have just really exploited that part of the field against them. And, you know, as I mentioned, I alluded to it. I mean, Mike McDonald, their former defensive coordinator who was so good the last couple of years, is obviously in Seattle and has the Seahawks off to a great start in his first year as head coach. You know, it's not that I think Zach Gore, the replacement, is not going to be a good defensive coordinator, because I do think he will be, but you know, there's an adjustment here. There's a learning curve, and for whatever reason, they just have not had their pass defense calibrated. And to your point, they've given up plays, and again, just going back to that theme that I've talked about, that they haven't played 60 minutes, their tackling has really faltered late in games as well. So again, these aren't the things you want to be happening when you're talking about someone who can create, you know, out of structure or in structure with Josh Allen at quarterback. So, you know, they're searching for it right now. And again, they played really well for stretches, but when it's gone sideways, it's really gone sideways. And, you know, I think, you know, even John Harbaugh talking over the last week, I mean, he's not just talked about them needing to be consistent, but he's talked about how at times it feels like it's inexplicable that things look so good and then they just turns and they look so bad then late in games.
Luke, there were a lot of questions about the Ravens' offensive line coming into the year, and then like week one, I think it was kind of easy to see like, ooh, that didn't look great. And now they're banged up on top of that, just looking at the practice report. So for this week in particular, how much are they in trouble on the offensive line? And then for the whole season, how much trouble do you think they're in?
Yeah, I mean, they had a nice performance against the Dallas defense, and I think, you know, when you saw what Dallas did the week before against New Orleans, and then you see what the Saints did against the Eagles the following week, and you guys know it's early, it's a week-to-week league, it's hard to do that, you know, Team A against Team B, and then what happens, you know, against another team. But, you know, that Cowboys front isn't exactly robust beyond Micah Parsons, and so they went into that game and said, we're going to run the heck out of the football. I mean, Lamar Jackson threw 15 times in that game. That was a career low for him in games that he started and finished. I don't think that's going to be the formula all season long. So, yeah, that offensive line remains a question. In terms of the injury report, you know, my gut, you know, my early, you know, feelings are that that's not going to be a major issue Sunday night in terms of, like, multiple guys missing the game. I think they're going to be okay. But that said, that doesn't mean they're going to be 100%. And, you know, I don't need to tell you guys that Bills front has played really well early in the season. So I think this is going to be a big test for the Ravens on Sunday night. And, yeah, I'm still not fully buying that this offensive line is fixed or going to be fine moving forward, anything like that. It was a step in the right direction against the Cowboys, but I think for the Ravens, and again, this kind of goes back to, you know, the Derrick Henry and just the running game factor as well. The Ravens with their O-line right now and the questions that they have, they certainly don't want to be in a position where they fall behind on Sunday night and suddenly Lamar's happened to throw 35, 40 times. Not because I don't think Lamar Jackson can throw the football. You know, I think he proved that last year in much more of a drop-back offense than they had been under Greg Roman, but pass protection-wise, you know, I don't know if this team can hold up in five-man protection if Lamar needs to throw 35, 40 times. And, you know, that showed up big time in that Kansas City game. So it's going to be interesting in that front. But certainly I expect the Bills to be a much bigger test than the Cowboys were on Sunday, which, yeah, again, I think that front, I love Micah Parsons as a player, but yeah, that's an undersized front that I think the Ravens just completely took advantage of.
Yeah, that unit's deep for the Bills too. Lastly, for me, Luke, what on earth is going on with Mark Andrews? Like, what's the best explanation, I guess, for you at this point for why he? I think last week, what was he, third amongst their tight ends in snaps and only ran like four routes?
Yeah, well, I mean, specifically last week, like I said, I think they went into that game just saying, we're going to run the heck out of the ball. We need to win. We don't think Dallas can stop the run. We think our offensive line is bigger than their front, and we're going to take advantage. So I'm not as concerned about week three in isolation. But I wish I had the answer for you, because I wouldn't have drafted Mark Andrews in two of my fantasy football leagues.
Me too.
Right?
Yep.
So even as someone who follows this team, you know, for amusement purposes only, let's be clear. But it's definitely left me surprised. You know, and it's one of those things that, you know, when it happens one week, fine. You have Isaiah Likely, who played so well in week one. And Kansas City has done a good job taking Mark Andrews away in the past, and they did it again in week one. But then it happens in week two and week three. Now it's a trend, and now you are starting to wonder. I will say this. He did deal with some nagging things during training camp. He was in a car accident that, thankfully, I mean, as bad as it sounded like it was, he escaped without any major injuries. But, you know, he did miss some time. And I do wonder, even though he's not on the injury report, you guys know how this is. It's the NFL, and teams are, you know, aren't always completely forthcoming with injury reports. I have wondered if he's completely healthy, but, you know, this offense, you know, I love Derrick Henry, love Lamar, love running the ball, all that, but there absolutely is going to come a time where they need to make more plays in the passing game, and they're going to have to get Mark Andrews more involved. But I'm with you. I've kind of been at a loss because, you know, again, one game is one thing, but we're now talking about three games where he's been a complete non-factor, and it's just shocking considering he's one of the best tight ends in football over the last 5 years.
Luke Jones on the Ravens. Luke, thanks so much for the time. Enjoy the game.
You too. Take care, guys.
WNST, BaltimorePositive.com. He's online on Twitter, at Baltimore Luke. Maybe think Luke Jones. Bills Ravens. It's a good one. Is it the best game of the week?
Gotta be. There can't be many in the league that would even beat it. On how many matchups, if you could dream them up, would be better than this one? Not many.
Vikings-Packers. Is that a better game?
You put that better than Bills-Ravens?
Maybe not.
I understand. Considering I like that game.
There are injuries, but Vikings-Packers is good this week. You know.
Well, let's see, because we do have our Sunday to ourselves.
I got one more that's good. Seahawks-Lions.
All right, that's pretty good. That's good. Yeah, that's good. Something about Seahawks-Lions, though, just doesn't... It just. I look at those two teams and think, that's a Thursday night game.
You ready for Chiefs-Chargers?
Okay. There we go. But, man, the wind is getting... Everything I read about Justin Herbert is making me less excited for that game. Yeah. Feels like he can't really move that much right now. And maybe he tries to tough it out, but he just tried to tough it out and he couldn't make it through the game. So, I don't know. We might be getting Heinicke against the Chiefs.
Does he have three touchdowns more recently than Mahomes?
He does not. Although, I'll check in the break if he had a game with a rushing touchdown.
Okay. 803-0550 on WGR.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
With those narratives gone, Josh Allen can just run the offense. And he's not getting bored with the checkdowns. I mean, I love that against Jacksonville. You know, I think these quarterbacks, it's hard for them. They want to make these big-time throws down the field. But Tom Brady's going to go in the Hall of Fame and be known as the greatest quarterback of all time, because you know what he did for 20 years? Just took what the defense gave him and did the smart, right thing with the football. And you're seeing in the Jacksonville game, they're dialing up play-action passes. Jacksonville's taking away the deep stuff. And Josh Allen checks it down to James Cook on 1st and 10 on a play-action pass. He gets 17 yards. There's nothing boring about that at all. That's good offense. That's smart.
That is the voice of Joe Marino, Locked On Bills, Locked On NFL Scouting. Joined Jeremy and Joe today. I think the part there he brought at the beginning and sort of there at the end, I think is super important. And something I don't think people want to bring up all the time, but I think it's spot on, and especially when you talk about a quarterback like Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes. The idea of being bored, of taking the checkdowns. Joe's right. It's good offense. Like it's working. And it's really good to see Allen not get bored with it. I heard a lot of calls over the last day and some change of, you know, Allen kind of changing his player, changing his instincts a little bit, of
you know, looking down the field, you know, many years, maybe even last year, he would have taken that 50-yard shot down the field, that 50-50 ball that maybe ends in an interception or just kind of a throwaway play that leads to second and 10. And instead going, nope, James Cook's open in the flat. I'll just dump it off to him, let him go get 14 yards. You know, yak, which is something that has been missing from this Bills offense since really Allen's been quarterback. I think it's a lot of fun to watch, actually, as an NFL fan, which is surprising because for years, that was always sort of the negative connotation. You know, it's a dip and dunk offense. You know, you're not actually doing anything. You're not making any hard throws. You're just you know, dumping it off in the flats or, you know, just to your running backs, your tight ends. Cool, it wins games. I think Joe's right. Tom Brady's going to walk into the Hall of Fame, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. And, yeah, cool, perfect. Joe Montana also ran an offense very similar to that. The West Coast offense is very similar of put the ball in the right spot every time and we'll be fine. It's hard to do, but when you can do it, it works. And it is fun to watch. I'm really, really enjoying the Bills offense up to this point. Let's get back to the phones here. We've got Steve on the line. Steve, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing very well.
I appreciate taking this call. I did want to talk about a couple things, but to caveat on what you just spoke about, Josh, it's not really been spoken about in mainstream media or anything like that, but let's talk about where Josh came from, where he went, what he went through, and where he's currently at. So his entire upbringing, he had the morals, the integrity, the respect that we all want to implore into our own children. But he also had the exposure and the tutelage with influence from a lot of these pros, a lot of the weapons that he had on offense. So when he first came in, I mean, he is 100% respectful, but he's a leader, and leaders sometimes follow. And it might not have been the best leadership of weapons we've had in the past, whereas we're taking the 50-yard bombs down the field or just throw it up. Diggs out there somewhere. I don't think it was a jab at Diggs the other day, because I truly believe that when Josh said everybody eats, what I am seeing right now, and get me if I'm wrong, I would love to hear your guys' intake or input on this. Sorry, I can't speak right now. Josh can finally lead from the front. He's not following any of the veteran receiving corps or any of the weapons on offense. He can finally lead from the front. He can finally be happy. He can finally smile a little bit. And when everybody's happy, everybody eats, everyone's happy. Coach McDermott has said many, many times, be humble and hungry, but also you got to have that hustle too. The cohesion of the team is phenomenal right now. The camaraderie of the entire core is outstanding and fantastic. But I think Josh is now leading from the front, and he is being celebrated, not tolerated, or he's treating his receiving core as being celebrated, not tolerated. Doesn't matter if you're straight off the bench, if you're a second stringer, mm-hmm. if you score, he's celebrating you, not tolerating you. I think that's about it. Sorry about my mumbling and fumbling
you're
around.
You're all good.
Words, but I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, Steve, thanks for the call, man. And I think you're right about that leading from the front. He's only 28 years old. But, like, for the first time in his career, he's sort of the old man, like, on the team. He's the senior of you know, the roster. You know, he's the guy that's been there and done that. He's one of the few guys left on the roster that has the scar tissue of 13 seconds and you know, the 2020 AFC Championship loss. He's one of the few guys. And now, ultimately, quarterback is sort of one of the few guys you want to be around that long. A lot of positions, by the time they get to 28, 30, you're sort of out on them. Quarterbacks, it's sort of the opposite. They get around this age, and you're seeing sort of the maturation of all these years of, you know, for Josh Allen, it is the humbling experience of getting no scholarship offers out of high school, having to go to the JUCO route, and then going to Wyoming, which used to be a pretty darn good mid-major power. Now, not so much. I think they're 0-4. They look dreadful. But, like, Allen can finally be that vocal leader. You know, he is the old guy. He has been there and done that. He does have younger guys on the roster who, you know, if you take his and Bean's word for it, he's sort of handpicking some of these guys. Dalton Kincaid and Keon Coleman, with both picks, he openly said that he'd, like, text Bean about wanting these guys. Or at least I think, like, on Keon's spot, it was just more like he was one of the last guys he really liked that was available. He's sort of handpicking a lot of these players. And it's been a lot of fun to see how good this team has looked early. It is still early. We'll never deny that. But they are blowing teams out. And they look like they're having fun. And the vibe was kind of there in training camp. I mean, they're playing Catan, for God's sake, at camp. Catan is a weird game that should not be a thing that brings football players together. It's not a thing that should bring most people together. I've played it once in my life, never again. But all respect to them. And they're talking about how good the vibes are. And everyone's got a, you're right, Steve, you're right. Like everyone has a smile on their face. You know, Allen's always been that guy that, you know, creates the fun handshakes with everybody and all that stuff. But now it's that along with, you're right, like going to celebrate with everybody. It doesn't matter who you are. If you're open, I'm going to get you the ball and I'm going to celebrate with you. And it's been really, really good, I think, for the team camaraderie to sort of get away some of the scar tissue. You know, a lot of the guys that had to go through the gut-wrenching losses. You're moving on to the next generation, you know, for lack of a better phrase, of the Allen Bean McDermott era. You're moving on to that next group. And so far, the returns have been fantastic. Let's go to Marshall here on the line. Marshall, welcome to the show, my friend.
Yeah, I got a problem with, like, Bills fans. Like, everybody's getting so hyped up about beating three garbage teams. Like, the Cardinals, the Dolphins, and who do we just play?
Jacksonville.
I can't remember. Yeah. None of them are any good. Like, I just don't understand why everybody's so hyped up. We have basically the same wide receivers we have last year, minus Diggs. And the run game is still mediocre. James Cook is averaging, what, like 4 yards on the season? It just, they're scoring a ton of points. I get it. But you haven't beaten anybody yet. So just let's relax.
All right, Marshall, I understand your opinion there. They're not just beating them. They're demolishing them. Games have been over at halftime.
I respectfully disagree with it. Tua and the Dolphins were expected to be really good, and
they were favored in the game.
Yeah.
So, but the game was over before Tua got hurt. I get it. The Bills have had the Dolphins' number, so you can call them garbage, what have you. Arizona has looked solid. They've looked pretty darn good. They don't look terrible. For me, it's more you can't pick your schedule. They are 3-0.
They have won in convincing fashion. It's not like these games are close like the Chiefs have been.
Or Pittsburgh, where they've scored 2 touchdowns total, and it's all defense.
And they've given up less than 10 points.
It's all defense. It's beautiful. Yeah. That's football, baby. That's football. But for me, I can understand the point. I think it's ridiculous, though, to act like it's ridiculous that Bills fans are getting excited. They're killing teams. The games are over at halftime. I work the games. I put my feet up. I'm hanging out for the second half. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It was 34-3 against Jacksonville with Miami. The game was done. They basically never had. They've yet to have to flex their muscles. Really, they've yet to have to do anything difficult. And you've got other teams who have played garbage teams and are losing. Cincinnati started the year off, boom, lost to New England. They look bad. Baltimore, at home. Lost to the Raiders. Raiders themselves lost to Carolina. They let up a ton of points. Andy Dalton looked beautiful up until Monday night. He was the only quarterback in the league so far this year through 3 weeks to throw for 300 yards and 3 touchdown passes in a game. I think it's fine to get excited early on the season. I mean, at that point, too, when is it okay to get excited? Do we count Baltimore as a good team? They're 1-2 and lost 3 starting offensive linemen. They're getting nothing from their tight ends, including Mark Andrews, who's been arguably one of the elite tight ends. So does he count?
Or do they count? Two players, and it might be a third.
Yep.
That one player of the week. Rousseau in week one and James Cook in week two.
You're blowing teams out. I mean, honestly, when does it start counting for the teams? Houston? Houston just got demolished by Minnesota. So are they a good team? I don't know. The Jets, I honestly don't think they're a very good team. I think they're very bland on offense, and they've played 2 bad teams as well. So I think their 2-1 is a little fluky. Tennessee should have beaten them. Mason Rudolph starts that game. They lose that game. And New England, again, I think is a bad team. They beat them 24-3. That is a good win because they demolished them. Seattle arguably is a good team. They're 3-0. Geno Smith just gets completions. That man is a wizard. I love watching him play the game of football. Tennessee's bad. I mean, so when will they have a win where it's okay to get excited? Do you get excited if they're 6-0? But they still haven't played anybody? I have a tough time with that. This is not college. You don't get to create your schedule and have a ton of cupcakes. That's not how this works. You get the schedule that is granted to you. They don't play the Chiefs or the 49ers until around the bye late in the season. Does Baltimore count? I would say they count. I'd also say Arizona was a tough team, especially in week one. Miami came into that game favored, and you blew them out. I mean, you looked like the big brother. And they look like they had nothing, even before Tua went out. They look like nothing. And you're leading every statistical category on the offense. James Cook, by the way, 4.7 yards per rush. I don't disagree. I have not loved the running game up to this point. I think it's looked about bang average, but they haven't really had to flex their muscle all that much up to this point. Going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll still take some of your calls here as we wrap up a Wednesday edition of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. You're listening to WGR.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Pleased to be joined in studio now by Bills rookie running back Ray Davis. And player interview appearances on One Bills Live are presented by Tim Hortons. Tim Hortons, the official coffee of the Buffalo Bills. All right, Ray, first one's on the board, man. Got in the end zone on Monday night. Just maybe walk us through that. Everybody was, you guys, it's funny. You got this mantra, everybody eats. Everybody did on Monday night. My God.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all three running backs got the score, so it was cool to see James get in there, then see Ty get in there. So me having an opportunity to get my chance, I know Josh and James was really pushing for it to happen, and they were just kind of talking to me on the sideline, like, go get it, Rook. You know what I'm saying? This is your first time.
So you're like the rest of us. I mean, you got family in for the game and all that. What? How kind of reception? Your family had to just be losing it.
Oh, they were going crazy. My sister was crying because she got to be able to see that moment. So it was definitely exciting for us.
Yeah.
And you dropped the ball, but did you get it back?
Yeah.
Okay, because you put it down right after you scored, and I was like, oh!
I know, but Jimbo made sure I got the game ball. Okay. Jimbo came on the field and was like, go get that ball.
Yeah, because you and Keon did the same thing. Keon's bowling his ball on the touchdown, and he's like, oh! Yeah. He actually remembered to go grab the thing. So I was wondering if you got it back. I'm glad you did.
Too much excitement.
How much hooting and hollering was there in the film room on Monday for some of your blitz pickup? You took out two guys on one blitz pickup in the game. Like, you just nailed both of those guys, and they went down like bowling pins.
I mean, you got to take pride in that. You got to take pride in protecting Josh and going out there each and every play, just understanding that, you know, no matter what, you got to go out there and lay somebody out.
Yeah, we knew, too, that, you know, Josh getting a lot of attention like that. Quarterbacks always do. He's having a special year now that going 3-0 is always big for a quarterback. And this is your first year kind of hanging around him. Because we're asking people what their favorite moment's been for Josh's season, because he's player of the week now, so we got to kind of dap him up.
Yeah.
What about you and the guys in the locker room? I mean, he's a superstar, right? One of those guys. He's one of those guys that's the face of the NFL poster. Right? But how is it in the locker room with him? What kind of guy, what kind of teammate is he? And give us, you know, maybe what he has helped you with of being a rookie and helping you acclimate.
You know, Josh is one of the boys. Josh is a great leader, a great teammate, and a great captain. You know, he's been in my position many years ago, being a rookie and, you know, playing some good ball and just having to understand that it's a slow process, but things that kind of work out. And I think people saw that with Josh's career. I mean, for him to get in his rookie year to be who he is now, I mean, it's somebody to look up to. It's motivational because, again, he, no matter what was thrown at him, he just kept prevailing. He kept doing what he had to do. So to be able to just get some words of advice from him is definitely monumental for me and for any of the rookies, not just on the offensive side, but the defensive side. Like, when Josh speaks, you listen. And I think he definitely commands the room, commands the team, and that's a guy that, you know, he'll give you the shirt off his back, and you have a lot of respect for him.
Schedule gets a little stiffer now. Baltimore, Houston, Jets. I know you're doing one at a time here. There are players in that locker room that are all too familiar with Baltimore and the style of football that they play. What's kind of been the word from the vets this week in terms of getting ready for this one and this particular opponent?
Focusing on ourselves. You know, that's something that Coach McDermott has very much preached. You know, it's about us and what we do. And, you know, Coach Smalley always says, you know, keeping the main thing the main thing. So it's about worrying about Bills football and just playing our game. And when we get there is when we get there.
Mm-hmm. So this, you know, as we said, it's like a day shorter week. We're already, you know, we're Wednesday already, walk through, a little change in the routine. And for you, this is probably old hat already. But for a lot of Bills fans like us and people, we don't get back-to-back-to-back primetime games. You know, I mean, It's, you know, Monday night, Thursday night, all that stuff. How is this? What do the players say about, you know, getting ready, having a long day in the run-up to the game, on a night game, that kind of thing? What's that been like?
The biggest advice, you know, that they give us is about taking care of your body. You know, staying in that routine, understanding that your body is, it's important. Yeah. It's your business. So understanding, getting that extra treatment, getting the tubs, getting stretched out, understanding it's going to be a quick turnaround. Mm-hmm. I think I learned that. I think when we played, when we had our first game, we had a quick turnaround to play Miami. Right. I saw guys right after the game in the hot tubs getting stretched out. Like, and I was like, okay. Like, this is serious. The guys are ready to get ready to go back and play another game Thursday. They're getting stretched out as soon as the game is over. They're in the tub. They're taking care of their body. So I quickly learned that, and I picked up on that routine.
Are you a nap guy for a night game? Like, just get a nap in somewhere in the afternoon?
It's too much excitement.
Okay,
too much excitement.
You're a little too restless?
Yeah, too much excitement. I like to be able to look forward to something all day. Once you take a nap, then you kind of lose the excitement a little bit.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah.
You want to keep your vibes going.
Yeah, you got to get that music going, get a nice little show going on, and enjoy it.
Yeah, give us a little hint at early returns and how fast you're getting into the game plan for Baltimore. What, you know, does their defense have a personality for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, we know what the Ravens bring. They have a really, really good defense. They got some really good skill players, and they got a lot of speed, you know, with their corners, their linebackers. And, you know, I'm very familiar with three guys on the team. I went to high school with them.
Okay.
Jason Onoway, David Ajabo, and Sanus Kane. So I got so I know them very personally. But just what their defense bring is just a lot of speed, you know, a lot of physicalness. And it's about, again, just playing our game and winning up front and going to get the W as much as we can.
Any texting this week yet, or pretty quiet on the text?
Yeah, we got some texting going on. A little group chat going on.
It is funny how that kind of just all of a sudden populates in your phone once the week turns and the, you know, they're up next. It's like all of a sudden the chatter starts.
Everybody starts talking, man.
I had a twofold question. One, what's been the biggest adjustment for you in the locker room, on the field, as a football player here? And what's been the biggest adjustment off the field?
I would say on the field, more of just a reality check, you know, understanding where I'm coming from and being, you know, from once being the guy to coming into a locker room, now I'm one of the guys. So just being able to take in the small details and the small learning from James, from Ty, and the rest of the guys, and applying it, you know, at practice and trying to get better at practice. So when I do get in the game, it's pretty easy. It's pretty free flow. In the locker room wise, it's about just being a team guy, you know, having fun, trying to communicate with all sides of the ball. Again, not just offense, but hanging out with the defensive guys, hanging out with everybody.
How about off the field, your family, making sure that you got a support network, that you got something to go home to, stable and all that. How's that? Cause that was hard.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Hey, I mean, it's very important. You know, you got to have a good mentor, and you got to be able to have a really good circle around you, your family, your friends, and, you know, they have to understand that you're busy. You know, things are going to be very difficult, and you're going to have long days. You may want to talk, you may not, but having that support group is very, very important, because those days where it is hard, you want to be able to go and talk to somebody, and they could take you away from football a little bit. Mm-hmm. They can bring you back to reality of, like, you know, you are a human being. You do have a family. You do have a life outside of ball. So it's been very fun to have my family around to take my head out, my head out of the game a little bit.
Yeah.
Atmosphere, you already experienced it in week one in that stadium. Was it a little different on Monday night?
Different. I mean, hi, Mark. What is it like Monday night? The game was pretty rocking, and the score was a little different, and the fans were still there. So, you know, I know we appreciate the fans, and we appreciate what Bills Mafia continue to do day in and day out. And like I said, for a rookie, this is insane to me. I mean, this is something I'm going to remember for the rest of my life.
Yeah, but I mean, you played some SEC ball, and you've been in some bigger stadiums. I mean, some of those stadiums, the SEC, seat even more people than they do here, which is like right around 72-73, and a lot of people that have experienced SEC football actually say Bills fans kind of
they kind of replicate the college atmosphere maybe more than any other pro stadium.
Yeah.
Did you feel that at all? Or?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I always say it's not about the numbers. It's about the passion.
Yeah.
And when you look around, you see the passion. You see, I mean, some of these kids grow up of being Bills fans and when they're mm-hmm. young, and then many years later, they're still at the stadium cheering. So being able to see the passion, the excitement, and just the love they have for their city and for their team, it's a little bit different in college because, you know, it's a bunch of alumni, a bunch of students there who were there for, you know, X amount of years, and, you know, you may never see them again. So to be able to know that these fans are diehard through in and throughout, that's something you got to be excited for.
Yeah. You get into these games like Monday night and it starts to turn your way, and you know, with, you know, you got a 31-point lead at halftime, you got to be coming out of the locker room with James and with Ty and going, all right, dudes, we're going to get like 9,000 carries in this game. Right. Hey. All right, you got to have conversations like that.
Yeah, a little bit conversations, but not really. You know, you coming out of halftime, it's 0-0. It's about, you know, keeping your foot on the gas. So it's about, hey, Jimbo, you know, keep setting that pace, and me and Ty are going to be right behind you to make sure that pace doesn't fall off. And whether that's running the ball, whether that's Josh throwing the ball, it's about just doing your job and having that mentality of, you know, the next man up.
All right, it's time now for this week's Timbits Timeout, presented by, of course, Tim Hortons, where we solicit the fans to ask Bills players a unique question. This question this week comes from Jenna, who asks, what is your favorite thing about being a Buffalo Bill?
My favorite thing about being a Buffalo Bill is, I'll be honest, it has nothing to do about being on the football field. It has everything to do about the fans. You know, when I go around and I go shopping or I'm walking around, taking a walk in my neighborhood, it's about just seeing the smiles and excitement on people's faces and the genuineness of just offering to help out and just do anything. So I think being a part of this organization is amazing, but also being a part of this fan base is even more tremendous because you got family. This is family forever, in my opinion. And, you know, I'm a guy who's big on family and big on support, and I know I got the support from Buffalo and the Mafia for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's one of my wife and I. That's why we stayed here after I finished playing. It feels like home.
Yeah,
you know, and they treat you like family. I mean, everybody's a Bills fan. Certainly, it's nice to be a former Buffalo Bill in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. But the vibe is very much home and family.
Like, family,
you get
oriented.
Treated like part of the family from people you don't even know.
Well, Ray, good luck this weekend down there in Baltimore for Sunday Night Football. Stay healthy. All right. And go kick some rear end, man.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Stay in one piece, too.
Yeah. That's Ray Davis, rookie running back for your Buffalo Bills. We now transition to the post-practice podium where Josh Allen is addressing the media.
I mean, again, he's big, he's tall, he's long, he's fast. He's able to guard tight ends, and he's long enough to really have a lot of pass breakups. And he does a good job in the blitz game as well. He's been a pretty efficient blitzer. So, again, making sure that we're aware of where he's at all times.
So, Josh, you win this week, AFC Offensive Player of the Week. Last week, James wins. And then the first week, Greg wins on defense. We hear a lot about, like, the everybody eats stuff and how much balance this team has. But does that kind of illustrate that when you've got guys both sides of the ball continuing to get these recognitions?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's a shame our O-line can't win Offensive Player of the Week because they play their tails off. And even going back to week two, James was able to win that because of what our O-line's doing. So making sure that they're getting love and they're getting the praises as they deserve it because they're playing together. They're playing very well. They're communicating well. It's easy to play quarterback behind these guys right now because of how hard they work and how well they're executing.
You know, it's probably hard to pinpoint one of them. Spencer Brown, through three games, hasn't given up a single pressure. I mean, can you just speak to how well he's playing?
Yeah, I mean, I think you see it in the way that he prepares. He has a lot of love for his teammates. He's a guy that's, you know, he's got no fear, and that's what I love about him. He, one bad rep, he shakes it off, he's on to the next one. And again, I know we got the deal done before the season. I'm extremely happy that we got him locked down for a few more years, and I'm very, very fortunate and lucky to play behind the guys that we got right now.
Josh, I know the blueprint is everybody needs for Khalil Shakir, 14 targets, 14 catches. As a quarterback, how nice is it to have a guy that you know down.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying this for a long time now. He's a football player, and he finds himself in the right spots because he does all the right things leading up to the game. He prepares well. He practices hard. He loves his teammates. And again, a guy that If he gets one target a game, he's happy. If he gets 15 targets a game, he's happy. He's the same exact guy every day, and, you know, guys love him for it.
You've had great success with this team. The team overall has had great success, but it's a lot of new guys, especially offensively. How do you maintain the course, maintain even keel, as the results have been so good out the gate?
I mean, I think we just stick to the program and what we're doing. I think focusing more on the process than the results right now, and you know, it's been serving us well. But the moment you start thinking about the end goal is when you get into trouble. So practicing hard, putting in the work throughout the week, making sure that we're still watching the film, we're still getting together, making sure we're talking through things. And again, just making sure that we're relying on each other when we're on the field. You know, there's 10 other guys that have your back, and, you know, you feel the love in the locker room, but you feel it on the field as well. And I know there's all those clips of us singing Mr. Brightside going around right now, but that's the vibe of this locker room right now. We just got a lot of love for each other, and we're just trying to find ways to play football the right way.
Josh, what struck you about how composed Keon was to be able to sit that out for the first quarter and then come on the field, run that route, and score a touchdown?
Yeah, I mean, very happy for him getting his first one. You know, he's worked extremely hard at his craft and to get to this position. You know, can't speak on everything else, but, you know, I love the guy. He loves the game of football. He loves his teammates. And it's not easy for a rookie to go and do that, like you said. So very, very proud of him for doing that.
All right, that's Josh Allen addressing the media. We've got to take a break here. We'll try to squeeze in a phone call or two when we get back here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We all know my last start on Monday Night Football and how that game went. So to be able to come all the way back from that and to have a special moment like that, you know, it's all God right there, you know. So I've been giving him the praise like crazy lately, you know, because it wasn't easy. I'm super thankful to my teammates for just the support and the love, you know, that it was encouraging. And it makes all the emotions way easier when you just go out there and you think about, I just want to make plays for my teammates. It makes it all simple again.
Damar Hamlin, gotta love it. My cousin, Andy, who lives in the Boston area, texted me this morning to say a couple things. One, that he won his parlay. And two, that...
very happy for Andy.
He saw a post-game interview with Hamlin, and Hamlin was shirtless. And he asked me if that's a Buffalo thing. Like, maybe we're, you know, rowdy fans, and we'll take our shirts off if they'll let us.
I don't know what's going on there. Von Miller is the first Bills player recently. I mean, I'm not going to claim to remember all of history here, but this season I have noticed Von Miller a couple of times post-game, you know, not during the week or anything, but after the game, shirtless at the podium. So maybe it's a defensive player thing, maybe it's nothing. I don't know, but Hamlin's not the first shirtless Bills player. Okay. I don't know.
And he won't be the last?
I'm going to guess no.
Maybe it's a thing.
Maybe it's a thing. Maybe it's a thing for the deep. Deion Dawkins has been shirtless. I don't think in an interview setting. Well, post game podium thing. He did some podcast where he was like naked. I remember, like, you know, shirtless anyway. Over the summer. So yeah, I don't know if that has been brought up or questioned at all, but Von Miller's the first shirtless Bills player I've seen post game setting.
Okay,
like that. Not in the locker room. You know, at the podium area. I mean, a lot of guys you've seen over the years no shirt on in the locker room. Makes sense. But coming out there, I don't know. I don't know what's going on there.
All right, might have found something,
or nothing. We might have found nothing.
He might have picked up on something that I certainly had not even known about. Here's Mike with us next. Hello, Mike.
Hi, guys. I just want to start off, and Bulldog, you'll know what I mean by this. I've never seen a Buffalo Bills game presented from a fan viewing perspective in such a great way. I mean, you had NBA former stars in the building. LeBron James is tweeting out about Allen, and then they do the Von Miller pre run out of the tunnel interview, which was just really cool. So I felt like, I don't know if it was ESPN or the Bills, but great job presenting.
Well, yeah, and you left out, they even showed on ESPN, they showed the entire, well, at least what I think would have been the entirety of John Fina's end zone, you know, right here, right now, you know, let's go Buffalo, all that stuff. Like, that was on the broadcast too, which was really cool, I thought. And the Miller interview, for as mostly a throwaway as I treat all of that stuff as, I don't know that I've ever seen one conducted with a player standing in that tunnel waiting to be announced. That even a Bills, someone in PR or media relations or game presentation, whatever, had to come over, sort of tap him like, you're next. And they wrapped up the interview and he put his helmet on and went over there, and then they showed him run out the tunnel and the smoke and everything. It was a really good job.
He did already have his jersey on, though. This is not another shirtless interview.
He was fully uniformed.
Jersey on. Yep. So they did an amazing job. And then, just to kind of give you guys like a vibe check, to me, this team feels familiar to the 2020 Bills, where they're almost sort of surprising everyone with how good they are. And it's awesome. I mean, I could go on and on. It was just a magical night to watch football in Buffalo.
So. Thanks, Mike. Altidore was there, I heard, also, the soccer.
Oh, I don't know. Soccer. I don't know. I might have just gotten in time to catch the Fina thing and then
I saw Steve Tasker.
Yeah.
I saw Steve. Yeah, I saw Ross Tucker.
He's around all the time.
Steve. I saw...
Not that it's not special.
John Murphy.
Oh, nice.
I saw Alan Davis. I saw a few people that you would know. Yeah. But I don't remember seeing Altidore.
I'm glad the caller mentioned the broadcast. I like usually the only time the broadcast gets mentioned is if it's terrible or something, you know, something's wrong. So I liked last night a lot. Chris Fowler is excellent. And Riddick, I especially like Orlovsky. Riddick can, he often makes very good points, but sometimes he also, you know, he's anyone. I'm sure I annoy plenty of you. But the whole thing together. Orlovsky and Riddick, I think, complement one another really well. Like, I'm not down. I like Buck and Aikman more than certainly more than you, maybe more than the average person. So I was a little disappointed not to get Buck and Aikman. They're to me still one of the gold standard crews. But last night's telecast was fantastic.
You'll get Joe Buck and Troy Aikman in 3 weeks.
Right.
I'm not a big fan of any of these guys, but what I like about Fowler, since we're doing compliments, is that game is out of hand and he's hosting a talk show.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these broadcasts could do well to turn them into a talk show, especially if you have interesting analysts, but it's just too much in a box. This game is the kind of game he wanted perspective on the Bills. He was asking this question I just asked, you know, like, what is this then? This team, look at him. Also, Jacksonville, what are we doing? They put the graphic up on Lawrence, 0-8 and the turnovers and just how bad his career is going, how badly. So I think that, not that I'm like the authority on this, but I think that's more interesting to me as a viewer, as a listener,
right?
If you're just not going to do play-by-play alone when the game is a rout. And that's the kind of thing. You want the perspective. And I'll say, too, the Jaden Daniels touchdown pass to McLaurin to cap the night. I watched it with my son this morning. You got to see this. You got to see this throw and catch. And Joe Buck is great on that.
Oh,
it's like the big game announcer called. His voice goes up a little bit more when he really can't believe it.
Right.
And he does that on that McLaurin.
Yeah, that came across on that play for sure. Yes.
Yeah. How about that kid, Daniels?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
The Jaguars have this many road wins ever on Monday Night Football?
Zero?
One. 1999. Their first ever road Monday Night game at the Jets. They're 1-4 only.
Okay.
But they have one Monday Night road win in their history. All the time we spent on Lawrence, really good discussion on, you were talking about, what is this guy really about as a player? And Eric, you know, what he wants to see, that he's, leadership stuff came up.
No answers, just more questions.
No.
It got worse.
Yeah, it definitely got worse. I mean, that I said it during the game last night, said it earlier, like that's the kind of performance that someone gets fired over. And so I don't know, it's 4:40 now, not 3:02 when I first stumbled into this point. That
they might have to win Sunday at Houston.
They look like they're in real trouble. Because to have the, and I'm going all the way back. Like I'm not covering the Jaguars, obviously, need to be said. But the way they lost last week, Peterson to me sounded just resigned to, I don't know, you know, it's tough right now. Like, he just did not sound like any kind of fierce, we got to dig out of this kind of thing, which, you know, that can go over pretty, you know, not great when a team is in the situation that they're in. But it just, the whole thing just feels to me like, yeah, we know we don't have it. That's what they feel like to me. We know we don't have it. That's what Lawrence looks like. That's what the coach sounds like. They got no answers on defense. Right. They didn't just stay in man. They tried. Allen, they shifted to zone at some point because ESPN's stats during the game had Allen like 8 of 9 for 126 yards against zone defense. It's like whatever they did, just they had no answers. Like you come into a game, we do this. This is what we do. Oh, that's not working. Oh, let's pivot to the thing we don't do. Great. Good luck with that. That's what last night looked like. Like the thing we do best isn't going to work. Injuries, the talent on the other side. So we got to do this other thing, and we're probably not really all that well prepared to do the other thing.
They're down two starters in the secondary. They lose Olawokan in the middle of the game. Like he's a tackling machine. That probably didn't help. And they lost a backup earlier than that who went to the tunnel after he had a big hit, maybe on Cook, on a run stop. But, you know, no Bills fan would sympathize.
No,
because
right.
How many guys on defense well?
I've got a secondary full of UB guys out there, and hey, I'm just killing
horns
people.
Up.
So, I mean, yeah, I don't want to hear any sympathy about Jacksonville's in tough with injuries.
Doug Peterson, I said to friends in the suite last night at halftime, like he might have 30 minutes to live. It's 37 games, and he's had two 9-8 seasons, and he's won a Super Bowl. So I guess he's going to coach this week. But this is when you do that, early in a season.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not taking Lawrence out. Look what Carolina did. It's the time of year where you want to do something and not just succumb to, well, this is how this year is going. This is the Dolphins right now, too. Like, what are they going to do about their situation? Nothing? Or are they going to figure out a way to somebody that gives them more credibility? They probably have an idea when Tua, if maybe he's back by week 6. But if he's not, and they kind of know that, what are they going to do? Oh, you know, tough racket. We had an injury and we lost.
Yeah.
You can't really do that this early. September, you have time. So good for Carolina, right? And look, just worlds different immediately. And so Jacksonville doesn't have that option with Trevor Lawrence. I mean, he's their commitment.
Right, yeah. Young's only in his second year. He hasn't been paid yet. Lawrence just got the big contract this offseason. Like, they are hitched to him for the foreseeable future. And to me, it's very evident the coach-quarterback thing is not jiving there. So, you know.
I just hate for them that they didn't throw the ball down the field as often. Like, that first half was totally getting away from them, and it was still just everything so short. And this is where I want to feel like my guy gives me a chance because he's got the arm talent. And we've got a first-round pick at wide receiver, Kirk Davis. Like, we've got players, and they just don't. And that to me would be, that's like the worst.
Yep.
You know, there have been Bills moments like that. Why are we not even trying to win this game? It's the second quarter. It's week 3. Are we done? They were done.
Yep.
And you can get beat. There are better teams than you, but it should never look like that. And that's why I want to be a little bit more cautious with what the Bills really have. Because I think they could not have had a cushier opponent. And Miami, who they've owned, is kind of the same right now, although much of that game was before the Tua injury. Really interesting. What can't be said about their season if they win in Baltimore? Win it all. They're an underdog.
Right.
If they win Sunday night, to the moon, right? I mean, that's how we're... I need that first.
Sure, I get you. I think right now they look like the best team in the league, but that, you know, that changes week to week. But I think they look like the best team in the league. The caliber of their wins, again, you don't know. Like we were talking with Eric Wood, right? Well, Arizona did this, and they beat them, and they. So you know, you can get lost in the weeds in that stuff all you want. So yeah, I don't know. Like Jacksonville might be circling the drain, and if they fire their coach this week or after they lose to Houston or whatever it is, then you know that's not going to be as impressive. You know, Miami. Again, well, you just said it. That was largely with Tua in the game, and they could not do anything. I mean, they got blown out in that game while he was trying to save them, and he just couldn't. So even more credit there than maybe last night. But tell me who looks better than them right now. You know, again, 3 weeks, I know, but I don't think there's a better-looking team in the league right now.
Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, Ross Tucker in 20 minutes. This is WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Mr. Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline as we gear up for Sunday Night Football between the Ravens and the Bills. Before we do that, I want to let you know you can let TRS Heating and Air Conditioning intercept your heating bills. Enter now at WGR550.com for a chance to win $1,200 toward your home heating costs. Don't fumble this opportunity. Contest ends January 5th. TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence, powering tomorrow, comforting today. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
I wonder how you feel about it. We were kind of joking earlier in the show that, you know, it's Bills-Ravens this week, and the Ravens have this all-black uniform set they're going with, and they call a game like this, they call it Darkness Falls. And their record in primetime is very good, 20-3. And I kind of said to Joe, I feel like the Ravens are cool, and they've always kind of been a cool franchise, you know, whether you like the players or not. They've got a good vibe going on over there, and I wonder if you think that about them, or if there's any team or franchise you've always felt like kind of just something about him is cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is one of them for sure. I've always admired also just how they run their organization, the level of success they've had, the consistency they've had. They've had one coach for a long time. I believe he's the, I think him, I think, is Harbaugh and Tomlin the same year maybe they come in?
I think that's right,
The longest tenured coaches, right, in the NFL right now. You know, but they've always been able to draft well, maintain a certain standard of play. It's not always been perfect, obviously. And yeah, of course, but you really go back to the Ray Lewis days and those defenses. That's kind of their hallmark, their calling card. And I mean, they win a Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer at quarterback, right? And then Rex Ryan comes in, and boy, that even ratchets up even more with some of the incredible defenses they've had. And it just makes it even more of what you're talking about here with the aura of them wearing the black uniforms and how great they were for many years in prime time at night, and they still have a really great record, but they were just unbeatable, you know, in that situation. So I do. I mean, I think that they have that aura about them, but I think the luster's been off a little bit recently because of some of the playoff failures and starting off here 0-2. And, you know, the Bills have a chance to go there and take it off even more.
Yeah, I got a tweet from Brian. This is an interesting point, just like the timelines. Brian wrote in, do the Ravens seem cool in our minds? Because before Lamar, they were the team that challenged the Patriots, right? They went toe-to-toe with New England a couple times. And, you know, for Bills fans just rooting against Baltimore or rooting against New England, it probably ended up rooting for Baltimore quite a bit in the playoffs. A game in Foxborough, I can remember, Gillette, where Lee Evans had one, he got one through his hands. And anyway, this year's Ravens team, you know, 1-2, Sal, McDermott called Derrick Henry a marriage made in heaven as part of this offense. And they've kind of recommitted to the rushing identity that they wanted, that they abandoned in the AFC Championship game and ran all over the Cowboys in the same way that the Bills did last year.
Yeah, they can run the ball. We know that. But I also want to kind of temper that by just the fact that, yeah, they played Dallas, and Dallas is so bad at stopping the run, and they play a lot of more, they play some lighter boxes. But, you know, make no mistake, they can run the ball, and they're very good at it. And, you know, like Sean McDermott said yesterday, it's kind of the perfect marriage of, you know, Derrick Henry with what they want to do. He's a great fit. And sure enough, that's the case, right? I mean, here's this guy that's just such a big bruising back. And what do we know about the Ravens over the last, you know, several years? They just really want to run the ball. And who's their offensive? What do they have as their offensive coordinator? They had Greg Roman as their offensive coordinator, and you always tried to do it that way. Now they've changed there, but they still have this identity where they want to run the ball. And they also have, by the way, the reigning MVP who can really throw the ball. The knock on them has been what? Wide receivers. They have been able to really, they're the anti, you know, Steelers, right? The Steelers in the same division. Steelers get all these really good wide receivers, but they can't seem to figure out, you know, how to win with them necessarily. Here are the Ravens, who really win a lot, but don't have those great wide receivers, but yet have their MVP quarterback. They just haven't figured that part out. And here we go again with another season, and them, they're the top running team in the NFL, guys. They're averaging over close to 5.9 yards a carry. That's number one in the league. They're number two, I think, by overall yards per game. Yeah. Number one yards per play. They don't have incredible passing stats. You know, part of that is the league is down, but ranking-wise even. But also part of that is because they're leaning on the run game so much, so you don't have to throw the ball as much.
That's what's so hard to figure out, too, about them right now, Sal, because there are some numbers on, like, the Ravens in the last 3 years, I think, have blown more double-digit leads than any team in the league. And they signed Derrick Henry probably thinking, all right, this has been a problem for us putting games away. Let's sign Derrick Henry and do it. And like you just said, their numbers rushing are great. And yet I've got back-to-back weeks where they blew a double-digit lead to the Raiders and they almost blew a 22-point lead to the Cowboys. Like, I don't even really know how they're how they're getting to that point where they're almost blowing these big leads.
I don't either. I think it's because maybe they are running the ball and they're trying to just... I reading some of their media, there's I don't know if it's perception or reality that they're trying to close out the game and just kind of, you know, use the clock, right? And well, the other team is, hey, we're going to stop you from doing that, and then they're getting the ball back. So they have a couple three and outs or whatever, and, you know, maybe it's philosophy like that. So, but there is something going on in Baltimore where a lot of, you know, fans and media are like, hey, you know, they haven't been able to hold leads, so, you know, it doesn't matter what's happening. And what, look, guys, it's kind of been a thing with them over the last few years. It was the last time the Bills played down there. 2 years ago, the Bills play in Baltimore, as you remember, bit of a rainy day, rainy game, and the Bills were down, I think, 10 and came back and won that game in the fourth quarter.
Right, exactly. It was basically the same situation. I do think, though, like this matchup, Sal, looking at the injury reports to start here, the Ravens having three starting offensive linemen injured, like pass blocking has looked like a struggle for them through a couple of games, and their line was a question mark coming into the year, and now they've got injuries on top of it, and the way the Bills D line has looked, I'm just really thinking about that being a massive strength of the Bills going in this game.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest advantage the Bills will have, right? Which is their D line against the Ravens offensive line, which already, even before their injuries, by the way, was an offensive line that had a lot of question marks. They had a lot of turnover this season. I remember after the first week, and especially after the second, there was a lot of talk about people not making enough about their changes on the offensive line and how much that might hurt them. Now, let's talk about these injuries real quick. Center Tyler Linderbaum did not practice the knee injury. Tackle Patrick McCary did not practice with a neck injury. And guard Andrew Voorhees did not practice with an ankle injury. They all, however, did play the entire game on Sunday. So that tells me it could just be, hey, these guys are dealing with things. We're going to lay off them. They'll be back at practice today. Something to monitor, obviously. But the fact they did not practice on a Wednesday does mean they're banged up, does mean they're dealing with something. So let's see today what happens. You know, my sense is, just looking at that and knowing how it generally works, by the time Sunday comes, they're going to play. But obviously, it's something to monitor here. And that's a massive, the three guys, three starters. And then Roquan Smith is dealing with an ankle injury. He was limited yesterday. And their starting nose tackle didn't practice yesterday, who's a nice player, Michael Pierce, with a shoulder injury. The Bills are a little bit banged up. We know Terrell Bernard and Taron Johnson will not play. That's already been declared. Kyrie Elam, as you mentioned in the update, dealing with a neck injury, so we'll see where that goes throughout the week. Otherwise, really nothing of note on the Bills side other than Josh Allen's still listed on the injury report. He's a full participant with the left hand, so I wonder if that means, you know, we'll find out today if he's still wearing the glove and had the fingers taped.
That's the Barnes injury report, brought to you by the Barnes firm. Car crash, for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Sal, on those, I think the biggest injury news is the guys that will not play. We know they're ruled out, but progress, right, for Terrell Bernard and Taron Johnson.
Yeah, that's right, Jeremy. I mean, even though obviously you'd love to have those guys, maybe it's more of a positive update on them than anything, even though they're not playing. And that is that both Johnson and Bernard, Sean McDermott said, could do a little bit more this week. So we'll see. Are they going to be out of practice today doing something off to the side? We'll see a little bit later today. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. But what he did was, and Sean, which really interesting, and McDermott rarely gives timelines, but he did say they thought it was a, like, in the 2.5 to 4 week injury range for both, which is why they didn't go on injured reserve. Now, I want to also tell everybody, listen, if, of course, the ideal scenario is you don't put them on injured reserve because you don't think they're going to miss four games. But let's just say, for example, one of them, let's say Taron Johnson here, this will be his third game missed. Let's say he does miss four games. Let's say he doesn't come back even next week. I know a lot of fans will be like, well, why the heck didn't they put him on injured reserve? Well, you don't really have to. You do have flexibility on the roster. You can elevate guys if you need them. You don't have to put a player on injured reserve. One of the reasons why you wouldn't do it is because the Bills only have six of those IR designated to return remaining guys. They already used two of them on Matt Milano and Darrington Evans. So if you think it's close, you may say, look, let's not use up one of those in case we really need a few more later in the year. And if he's out 4 weeks, no, you don't want it. You think he can come back. But if he's out 4 weeks, we can still get by. And so far, they've gotten by on their roster. They haven't even really had to elevate anybody as a defensive back. So they've been okay there. It just becomes an inactive situation like it is with other players around the roster. So while it's ideal to, it's not ideal, I should say, to have them miss four games when you didn't put them on IR, there still is a possibility that could happen.
So with regard to this atmosphere, we're talking about that, the darkness falls, the primetime Baltimore. I don't want to like take a shot at Miami here, but the Bills have played two home games and one in Miami where they get a good number of fans, right? How would you compare Baltimore as a road test versus Miami as a road test? What I'm getting at is, will they practice with tons of crowd noise this week, where maybe Miami weeks they don't? I don't know one way or the other.
They always do.
Okay.
Always do.
But is this a different?
Home,
is this a different animal?
In home
Miami?
Games, I think. In home games, I think they do a little bit. They'll always. Yeah, it's a different atmosphere. Look, I mean, I've been at Miami when it's gotten a little bit louder, you know, but usually it's not the case, and there's a lot of Bills fans there. Baltimore can get pretty loud too, but you know, it's not one of these stadiums and the way it's designed and teams where, you know, throughout the game it's just full throttle like it is here in Buffalo generally. But they can get pretty loud. The Bills have faced some tough road environments. Look, I mean, Kansas City's probably the loudest place the Bills face, you know, when they go on the road, and they've handled that obviously very well offensively. And sometimes, now look, the disadvantages, obviously, you know, you have to have silent counts. The other team can jump the snap count. You can't do as much maybe that you want to do when you're at the line of scrimmage because it's a little bit tougher. But the Bills have been able to handle that stuff pretty well over the years. We know that they played well offensively in Kansas City in louder environments, even in Baltimore going there to win. Philadelphia last year, a little bit louder environment. It was a little bit rainy, but they've done pretty well. It's not Miami, but it's not. It's not one of these stadiums where I say, oh my God, it's going to be incredible. This week might be a little bit more like that because they have a night game. The darkness falls. The fans are going to be ramped up. I believe they're honoring Mark Ingram before the game. And I believe they're bringing back some Olympians who are from the area to honor them. So they're kind of doing a lot of this stuff to, you know, really get the crowd going before the game. And I believe I read they want the fans in the stands and in their seats by 8 p.m. for, you know, the pregame stuff.
Does this mean like Michael Phelps is going to be there? Right? Isn't he from that area?
I think Katie Ledecky is too. Yeah. There's a few.
Yeah, I think though, I thought I read that it was going to be the some of the track and field, so I'm not really sure exactly who. I don't know if they are specifically, but I believe some of the track and field athletes.
Okay. You know, so like thinking about the road atmosphere, the test here for the Bills, it's also a spot where, and the Bills, this is nothing new to Josh Allen or Sean McDermott. Right now, the Bills are one of the teams that's the talk of the league. I know it's not, you know, you're beating the Super Bowl champs, but a win over the Bills would be scoring a big win in the standings. And also, you know, if you beat the Bills right now, I feel like any team that does that is going to feel like, all right, especially Baltimore here, you know, you don't want to go to 1-3. If they get to 2-2 with a win over the Bills, that's going to feel like they pulled their season back and, you know, they're right where they need to be.
Oh my gosh, for sure, right? I mean, think about if the Bills were in that situation and what we'd be talking about here and saying, okay, look, you win this game, you're back on track. You had a couple down games to start the year, and now you're back to where you need to be. There's no doubt about that. I'm sure that they're feeling that in Baltimore. I'm sure the fans are feeling that and thinking about it that way. You know, and what is it in Buffalo? If you happen to lose this game, I think there's a little bit of, okay, you got two more really tough road games coming up, Houston and the Jets. Like, you better get the next one, or you're staring at possible 3-3, right? I mean, that could be the case too. If you win this game as a Buffalo Bills fan, thinking, all right, I mean, you already got through this 4-0. Even if people said 4-2 for the first six, so you've given yourself such a buffer. So I do think it represents a lot, you know, for both these teams, and like, they'll be ready. They're well coached with John Harbaugh. They have the reigning MVP. And the other thing about this game, guys, is weather could play a factor. It's going to rain all weekend. I think there's some of the stuff that's coming up from the Hurricanes. The Hurricanes not headed that way, but I think some of the system that's pushing through with it is going to head that way down to the East Coast. And I think it's going to be pretty rainy. It doesn't mean it's going to be rain for the game, but I think there's a pretty good chance that that's the case.
Sal, one big thing that happened yesterday, Josh Allen talking about the receiver conversation. And he's asked the question about, you know, how spreading the ball around. And he makes a point to steer the conversation so that it wouldn't get misunderstood. Because after what he said on Monday night, you know, there's a lot of, was he taking a shot at Stephon Diggs? I saw it on ESPN. I saw it at Pro Football Talk. It was interesting to me that Allen made a point and then said, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. He was basically acknowledging, I see what you're taking from my comments, and I want to make sure that you take what I want from these comments.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, too. He wasn't asked about Stephon Diggs specifically, but basically, what did you mean by it, right? And I believe Matt Parrino asked him that. And Josh kind of, like you said, volunteered that and steered that there. Look, we know these guys always say, these athletes always say, we don't pay attention to what people are saying. But they know what people are saying, right? It's the same thing when Josh says, there's a video of Mr. Brightside going around, a viral video. Like, they know that. They see that stuff's happening. And what's really interesting to me here is, what's funny, guys, is for all of the media trying to start stuff, oh my gosh, you guys in Buffalo, nobody in Buffalo is really talking about that over the last 48 hours. Matt Bove made this point last night on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. We did an episode, and I invite everybody. We had a good discussion about this, so people can go and download and listen to that Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast. And Matt made a good point. He said, it wasn't even coming from here. It was only coming from the national people who are out on the outside looking in, really. There may have been a person here or there in Buffalo, but really, when Josh said it, there was not a lot of commentary from here, us, this radio station, whoever, print, whatever, in Buffalo saying, oh, is he talking about Stephon Diggs? It was coming, as you said, Jeremy, from the ESPN talking heads and the FS1 talking heads and making something about it. So Josh kind of squashed that a little bit. Hey, I love 14. You know that. Josh was making a point that I'm just talking in general about, you know, how we're feeling and what we're doing here and what we're trying to build and how good that feels to be able to have, you know, this group that always just plays for each other, pulls for each other, doesn't care about stats. It is a general statement that a lot of people make all the time.
Yep.
I understand. By the way, I don't blame anybody for going there and thinking that. I get it. Like, I understand. Like, with all the stuff that's happened for the past few years, I think it's natural to think something like that. But as you said, you know, Josh kind of made a point to make sure that, you know, that wasn't the case. That's not what he's trying to say at all.
Well, I think, you know, sure, anybody that wants to have that grudge or have that be part of their story, that's totally fine. It's in bounds. It's sports. It's what we do. I think what Allen was trying to say, or at least what I take from it, part of it is, like, our entire existence is not a revenge tour. You know, like, we're just,
right,
we're playing a game here. We're trying to be the best we can be. And, you know, the Bills are celebrating the identity. Whether a lot of coaches will do this. What they're getting out of this mindset, Sal, is buy-in from some guys that might not be getting the glory, like a Mac Hollins, who's going to be on the field and, you know, making big plays in a blocking role or whatever. Like, it's just a way for this offense to try and get buy-in from everybody, which is pretty standard around the league that, you know, these teams will try to find ways to get everybody to buy in.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's kind of what the Bills have tried to build and wanted to build and pretty much have had for the last 8 years. And, you know, I've always said this team, in a lot of ways, obviously outside of the quarterback situation, but just kind of the way they went about their business, what people thought about them, the way they're playing, reminds me a lot of 2017, guys, when it's just, hey, it's us, right? Everybody thinks that we're going to stink. We're building this team where if we play for one another and we have this good culture and, you know, we don't care about, you know, how we get there, at the end of the day, you know, we're going to be fine. And that's what's happened here. And of course, there's a lot of differences, but this team did remind me going into the year of 2017. And so far, you know, 3-0 and playing pretty well. So it was interesting that Josh said that yesterday. And like I said, I mean, here's the other thing. They do play the Texans next week, right? And like, I'm sure everybody knows that. Not that Josh is speaking because of that. That's going to be a storyline. It's going to be a story no matter what next week, no matter what Josh says, no matter what Stefan says. And give Stefan credit. I want to give Stefan credit here, too. Remember a couple weeks ago, he said, you don't have to talk bad about your ex-girlfriend to make your new girlfriend look good, right? And he's kind of steered away from that, too. Anytime he's had a chance, people have thought he's talking about the Bills. There was something he said that people thought he's talking about the Bills. And he's like, no, I'm not doing that, right? So people want to make it. For Stefan's credit, he also did the same thing. You know what's going to happen next week, guys? I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. I said this last night in the podcast. On Sunday next week, they're going to go to Houston, and we're all going to be waiting to see Josh walk on the field and see Stefan beforehand. They're going to go to midfield, and they're going to give a bro hug to each other, and they're going to laugh, and they're going to talk, and the videos are going to go viral, just like it was with Gabe Davis this week, and then they're going to go play football. That's what's going to happen next week.
Do you also agree, not to move ahead a week, that I think the Bills will be trying to get under his skin in that game?
You know, you said, so jump in real quick, you said that yesterday, that the Bills will be trying to get under his skin, like just for the on-field purposes
on
even.
On-field, because
I didn't say that.
Jeremy fought
them in practice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, it's going to be fiery. And
but
whatever.
After the show, too, I thought, like, I wonder, I saw Taron Johnson, like, not practicing. I'm like, I wonder if they're holding him out because they know he's covering Diggs one-on-one, and they want to make sure he's 100% healthy for next week.
Well, a couple things on this. Number one, I totally understand that thought, Joe, but I don't think so. I think that if Taron Johnson was healthy, he'd be playing.
Okay.
And if he's not healthy next week, he's not playing. They're not gonna make it based on that. They're not gonna make it based on what the schedule looks like or who they're playing. Yes, I do think though, but I don't think that's abnormal, right? I mean, like, if that's how you beat your opponent, that's what you do. And when you say those guys get under their skin, I'm just thinking of certain players. Look, I mean, Rasul Douglas, the first that pass that went to Gabe Davis that Gabe had out of bounds, Rasul let him know about it right away.
The finger wag.
Right?
Yeah.
The finger, right? I mean, like, that's what you do. I mean, that's part of playing sports. It doesn't matter if it's Gabe Davis, Stefon Diggs, or somebody, Garrett Wilson, anybody. Like, if you think that can help you get an advantage with your opponent, and absolutely, look, I mean, Christian Benford, Rasul Douglas for a half a year, Kyer Elam, when they went at it. Like, these guys know, they went against them. They're going to know some things that, you know, might get him a little bit riled up, might get under his skin a little bit. And that's what you do. There's no doubt about it. So, absolutely, I would think that that's the case. But I think that goes, you know, with just playing in sports and knowing your opponent very well. By the way, I looked it up, guys. Here we go. Mark Ingram will be the Ravens' legend of the game Sunday night. They will also be recognizing Olympic gold medalist Quincy Wilson from the 4x4, Masai Russell from the 100-meter hurdles, as well as WWE superstar Seth Rollins and Wizards guard Bob Carrington on Sunday night.
I got Seth Rollins. We're gonna need somebody.
You said Wizards legend, and I was like, for half a second, thought, oh, is it going to be Michael Jordan? It's going to be no, not Michael Jordan. Okay,
Wizards guard. They did not write legend from what I wrote about
all
that.
All right, Seth Rollins. Thank you for that, Sal, because that's going to tie in perfect. Yeah. I have a Let's Get Stupid to bring up next segment. I told you I want to do a Let's Get Stupid about this game, and Seth Rollins is going to tie into it perfectly. So stay tuned, everybody. Thanks, Sal.
All right, you got it, guys.
Sal Capaccio, as we gear up for Bills Ravens. A Darkness Falls game, a matchup of last year's MVP and this year's MVP. Knock on wood, maybe, you know, probably. Looks that way. That's a little bit of the theme of Let's Get Stupid. If you want to hang out and listen to us talk about something ridiculous, that's coming up next.
It's player of the week because they play their tails off. And even going back to week two, James was able to win that because of what our own line's doing. So making sure that they're getting love and they're getting the praises they deserve it, because they're playing together, they're playing very well, they're communicating well. It's easy to play quarterback behind these guys right now because of how hard they work and how well they're executing.
Josh Allen, he's right. The Bills offensive line has been excellent here so far this season. How big a test is Baltimore? Baltimore is always some level of big test. But one interesting aspect of this matchup that's different this year from how it's been, Baltimore was the best team in the league last year, is they're getting thrown all over them. I mean, they They have not been good against the pass so far. The Bills were smart. It's exactly right to my heart with it that they threw the ball a lot right away on Monday night because that's where Jacksonville is weak. And they had injuries, too. So
right.
It was very good to see the Bills not just sort of doing their run, you know, happy kind of thing. And, you know, they could have because they might have thought they would have an easier time defensively and just sort of keep it close. But to their credit, they didn't. And look what happened. I don't know. I think it's different on the road. But I think that's the way to attack the Ravens right now, given how their season has started. And so it's a little bit of a softer matchup, I think, for any offense playing them than it's been lately.
Yeah, I'm gonna dig into that a little anyway, just see how much it's skewed by Dallas going as pass heavy as they did in the back end of that game as they were scrambling to come back. I mean, I would assume Baltimore gave up some sort of gimme yards to try to prevent, against giving up a cheap, quick score. Because when you got a big lead, that's kind of how you play it. So that can skew it this early in the season, especially. We're only talking about three games. So like one 200-yard half, say, could really throw things out of whack. I don't know if Dallas got to 200 yards in the second half of that game Sunday. I'm just saying, hypothetically, it could skew it.
They did. Like, they rolled it up in the last quarter.
Yeah. So, but look, that was there for them, and that doesn't mean you shouldn't go looking. I'll be really curious to see how the Bills choose to approach their attack in this game, you know, because I think we know what Baltimore is likely to want to do, which is, you know, Derrick Henry and Lamar and the ground. And the Bills might feel like, you know, let's see, you know, we'll get into a you-know-what measuring contest with you on how tough we are, right? Like, you're going to run it, we're going to run it. We can play that game. I'm not predicting that is where it will end up, but it could. And so, hopefully if the pass defense is there to be exploited, they handle it the same way as they did against Jacksonville. Because I really wondered, I mean, I think I said it, I think it was pretty evident that I was wondering if it would take them getting in a hole, kind of really like it did in week one. Mm-hmm. It took them being down by 14 points to start throwing it, and they started moving the ball and scored and took the game over and managed to get that game into the garage. This Jacksonville game, like, the game just started. It's just throw, crooked score, it's over. If the matchup dictates same, then I'm going to want to do the same. You know, what was really, to me, the best thing about Monday night is the realization, again, if maybe you didn't doubt this at all, that the Bills still have that fastball and will lean on it when they feel like this is the path of least resistance. This is our best path to win this game, so let's do this. And Allen rewarded them by taking impeccable care of the ball. Again, like he just said, it helps a lot when you don't get touched, and he barely did.
That seems right. Getting connected with the fans brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We have Kurt with us now. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Good. It's an honor to be on your show. I listen all the time.
Wow. Thank you.
That's flattering. Thank you.
So I just wanted to a couple of things, get your opinion. One, I think the Colin Allen overrated as he has in the past. I think that was a little bit skewed by having Diggs. I think, I don't know, there's maybe 4 or 5 seconds, if I'm right, that you kind of get in the pocket, right, guys?
Not even, but yeah.
I mean, right. So if Diggs is throwing his tantrums in the locker room, if, hypothetically, it looked like Allen was just always having to look at him first. And, I mean, that's valuable, valuable time off the clock when you're talking 4 or 5 seconds. It looks like now that Allen's, number one, he's grown to protect the ball, which is great. He's sliding, which is great. He's still able to run. They're letting him run, but he don't need to prove himself anymore. So that's all great that he's tuned all that up. And now it seems like this year we're going to have guys just getting 5, 6 grabs a game, 50, 60 yards, and it's just going to be spread out across the whole offense. And I think that, I know a lot of people were kind of worried about the Jaguars game, but I wasn't at all because of watching them, obviously, after the first week of them doing the old stuff that they did, got down and they came back. But now
with that, like this week was just, I knew they were going to kill him. I don't know why, but they look more confident. What do you guys think about what you've seen from them so far with it?
I think they look like the best team in the league. But it's 3 weeks. I mean, I think really you've got a big 3 week chunk coming up here against teams that you should expect to have to be dealing with in some form or another at the end, whether that's actual playoff matchups or you're just battling them for seeds. You could be battling the Jets for the division even. I mean, they're just 2-1. So just a game back of you with your perfect record. So this next 3 weeks, like I feel a little bit like, you know, you want to see how each matchup goes, and maybe especially against the Jets because you're going to have them again later in the year. But I feel like if the Bills go 2-1 through these next three, we're going to be feeling like they're in great shape. I mean, what does that even say? I mean, they'd be 5-1 with wins over already.
Miami
some combination,
away.
Miami away, Jacksonville here, and then, you know, two of the three of Houston, Baltimore, and the Jets. I
all
said
away.
Those in the wrong order, all the way. I mean, that would be, you'd be feeling like they're in the driver's seat for the conference, I think.
Except for
point.
Kansas City, what is Kansas City doing over their next three games?
Right.
You know, like, you
right.
could go 5-1 and be a game back.
Yeah, they could.
I just, you know, I don't disagree with any. I've said the same things, you know, some of the same things, like Bulldogs overall on how they look compared to the rest of the league. It's just too early to extrapolate too much from it. I was going to save this until 5 o'clock. All right. Just keep this in mind. Maybe you knew this, maybe you didn't. The Bills just won a week 3 game by 37 points. And everybody's in love with how they did it. You want them to, the fans want them to win out in the argument about Diggs. You want them to win, but you also want them to look like they were right.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the perfect game. You're scoring 47 points and you're throwing it to everybody. Who was it? 10 receivers? It was 10
yes.
different receivers.
Yes.
What a dream. Last year in week 3, the Bills beat Washington 37-3. Stephon Diggs had 8 for 110. You know how many Bills caught passes in that game? 10. Like, you think back 1 year, early in the season, right? That's where we are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the Bills did the same thing to Washington. And Diggs had 110 yards receiving on 8 catches. 9 other Bills also caught passes. So you had both. You had the alpha who, mm-hmm. oh, it's nice to have guys who don't need stats. I guess last year you had a guy that needed stats that you went to the playoffs with every year, by the way. And it worked out fine. And you still got 9 other receivers completions that apparently didn't care about stats. So that's what happened 1 year ago. Then you got to, you know, the second half of the season, and Diggs was relegated to a meaningless role almost. I mean, just way down. And some of that was intentional. Some of that was, you know, maybe himself or the conflict that was apparently brewing, like whatever. And your offense wasn't as efficient. They ran the ball more. They still had different receivers, but you didn't have the one guy. And that's what we love now. But I don't know. Like, there's still a lot to be written. And so I, again, because I feel like when anybody listens to me talk like this, they think I'm being critical or something. Like, it's not that they're not playing great. It's not, it's going perfectly. And they've had injuries and it's still going perfectly.
There's just so long.
It's just it's so early.
Right. That Washington game you reference where 10 guys caught balls was the week before the Miami game, which got them to 3-1. They blew out Miami, too, 48-20. 8 people caught passes in that game. Diggs had a big game, 6 for 120, but 7 other people caught passes, and then the wobbling started. It's like it's not a perfect record, but they were 3-1, and then it's, you know, everything from there kind of was a struggle. They got the London game and the injuries. You barely beat the Giants. You lose at New England. You barely beat Tampa. Lose to Cincinnati. Yeah, you know the deal. And how tumultuous last season felt by the time we got to Thanksgiving and the overtime loss in Philadelphia, and they're 6-6, and oh my God, right? It doesn't take much. You just, you know, that's why, you know, I'm saying they look like the best team in the league, but it's only 3 weeks. You know, like that's why this next block of games is so important here for this. And why I said if they can manage 2-1 through these next three, I mean, of course, it'd be great if they could get all three, but I mean, I would sign in blood right now for 2-1 out of these next three games. All on the road, 2 in prime time, good opponents. Like you get to there, I think you're going to be feeling like, okay, I'm on track, and maybe if I get a lull, I've already built up enough that I'm in good enough shape here. But you got to do it first. So you can look like the best team in the league right now. That's why I'm not saying they are the best team in the league. They look like the best. I don't think anybody – who knows who the best team in the league is right now?
The only or almost the only worthwhile conclusion to draw on this whole, as you've called it all summer, experiment, It doesn't start until January. It just really can't. If they miss the playoffs, which seems much less likely now than before it started, that's – is especially now a disaster, right? So let's rule that out. Let's say they make the playoffs, and then it's all going to come to the surface. It's going to be, all right, well, it's great that you have all these different guys. What does that mean against the Chiefs or whoever else you might, even the Steelers? Like, what does that mean against teams that have studied you all season? And if your guy is only kind of a B-level guy, as opposed to what Diggs was, who didn't at all smash in the playoffs. I recognize that.
Right.
But the Bills also lost, right? Coincidence? So you're going to have to get that then, or else what was it for?
Yeah, you should trust that, yes, Allen has had great success against teams that want to play man defense. And he did, again, until Jacksonville pivoted, and then he just killed their zone defense too. They didn't have the dudes to do it, right? If you run into a team in January that's won 12 games and their defense is good, and I'm going to trust that they have better players than Jacksonville had on Monday night, if they want to go that route. And so I don't even know yet. Like, of course, it's encouraging that they found their way to it without even being dragged, right? The passing game, I mean, and that it worked. But that's where who you played comes into it. And once you are playing teams that are of a higher caliber and have better dudes out there on those islands, if they choose to do that, can I win? Can I get the separation that I got, against Jacksonville? Because you watch the Bills' corners, Douglas and Benford specifically. They're just swallowing talented receivers up whole on the outside. There are guys in the league that can do that. Jacksonville, I don't think, was one of those teams. So it fed right into what the Bills wanted to do, and it worked perfectly. But there's no guarantee that, to me, it's just not a given that this is all going to work when you get to, like you said, when you get to January. Everything ratchets up. You're playing better teams. You got better pass rush. You're not going to be in a protective cocoon back there like Allen was on Monday night. Like, so everything just sort of it just gets harder.
Unless they're too good for the league, then it'll all be fine.
In which case, like, that would be kind of incredible, I think.
Yeah, like, that's pretty rare. Kansas City hasn't been too good for the league, but they've won three times. Yeah. So it just doesn't matter yet. It's going as well as it could. It's great to talk about, but it's just not the time for this was good, this was bad. I mean, it's too early for that. 803-0550, Sal at 4, Mike Show open the Bulldog, WGR.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.